Nerdette is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. Join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic HBO original limited series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Think on your feet for our Fast and Curious 5K, a one-of-a-kind race hosted by WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times on Saturday, July 27th at Humboldt Park. More info and early bird registration at wbez.org/events.
From WBEZ Chicago, I'm Greta Johnson, and this is the Nerdette Book Club. It's just like a regular book club, except sometimes the author stops by. It is April, and our selection this month is Marie-Helene Bertino's gorgeous and entrancing novel, Beautyland. It's about Adina, born in Philadelphia, at the same moment in 1977 that the Voyager 1 spacecraft leaves Earth. When she is a young girl, she realizes she's actually an alien disguised as a person, and her task is to send reports back to her home planet about humanity via fax machine. That is all I want to say for now, since we're going to do our best to keep this a spoiler-free conversation. Marie, welcome to Nerdette.
It's so nice to be here. Thank you, Greta.
So you were born in 77, right?
I was, in Northeast Philadelphia, like our heroine.
Do you remember the point at which you first learned about Voyager?
I think it was maybe 10 or 15 years ago, when I discovered that they had sent a golden record into space, and it immediately captured my imagination.
Yeah, I mean, that golden record, it's magical. It's magical.
It really is. The idea that we can put a collection of sounds and images and music like Chuck Berry onto a little time capsule and send it into space with the hope that extraterrestrial life will listen to it and know something about us. It's so precious and adorable and potentially doomed and never going to work. But the hope is there, and that's all that matters.
It is funny. I feel like there is a real, like, I mean, there's an earnest naivete to it. There's also a real, like, optimism. Like, let's not talk about any of the horrible things we do. Let's just talk about the fun, nice stuff.
Yeah. You know, in researching Beautyland, I came to discover that there has been critique of that golden record, of not having, of not including like the messy bits of being a human. And the more I read about it, the more I began to develop my own opinions about and ideas about what I would send if it had been up to me. And I love Carl Sagan. I love the work of Carl Sagan. The team that put the Voyager record together was led by Carl Sagan. But I've been thinking about it recently, as I've been interviewed more and more about it. And I've been thinking, like, it is, though, kind of the equivalent of doing a lot of talking on a first date and not necessarily asking too many questions. And so it's really like, this is us. These are all of our sounds. This is what it looks like when we go to the grocery store. This is us. And I have begun to wonder if there was a way we could have instead asked the very simple question and just begun a conversation. But I know next to nothing about astrophysics, and thankfully it was not left up to me to decide.
Well, that's a really interesting concept, because I mean, you're right. That's probably my biggest, like, first date pet peeve. It's terrible when people do that, you know?
Right. Too much upfront about oneself and not enough questions about the other. Yeah.
Curiosity. Yeah.
Curiosity. Exactly.
Well, it's interesting to hear you use the word messiness when it comes to humanity, because I do think that's something Beautyland does really well, is it's such a full embrace of what it means to be human, mess and all.
Thank you. I hope so. As you can imagine, the project of the book was deciding what to include and what to leave out and how much to include of it. And so I really wanted to present a broad spectrum. I think I erred on the side of including more of what I would call the profound mundane, you know, the hours and days in which we really do spend our lives, like the errands, and the regular quotidian conversations. And I wondered / hope that if I turned my attention onto those parts of life, they would begin to shimmer and they would begin to attain significance. And so, you know, Beautyland does have a focus that is mostly on the quotidian. And I hoped that that was more realistic in the way of presenting what life is really like.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think too, it really feeds into that idea that like the more specific you are, the more universal something can become, you know?
Oh, that underlined the book for me. And it was the question I had for myself. It was like, if I am as honest as I can be right here in this moment, in this apartment in Brooklyn, if I double and triple down on things that I've always avoided in my writing, like being Italian American, like growing up in Northeast Philadelphia, which is like, quote unquote, not literary terrain, let's say. If I can do that, if I can be as specific as possible and get to the heart of the heart of the heart of the thing, can I reach a broader audience? Can it hit the universal? Can I match something like Auto World in Northeast Philadelphia to the universe? That was so much the project of the book. And I hope that it gets even halfway there.
Yeah, I mean, the answer is fuck yes.
All right, Greta, yay. I'll take that. I accept. Thank you.
I think one of the things I loved most about this book is partly what I love about all good sci-fi, which, like, you know, you could certainly argue this book definitely hews more literary than like genre fiction, but you still really embrace that idea that, like, by taking one step away from the idea of humanity, you actually end up being able to tell the most like utterly human story.
Well, I hope so. I really hope so. By like skewing one aspect of quote unquote reality, can you more directly talk about what it is actually like? And one of the neat surprises about the reception so far of Beautyland has been that expansive embrace from the genre folks, from science fiction folks, which has been unexpected and really lovely, because those folks are persnickety. They are appropriately picky. And I would have assumed they could find a lot of fault in Beautyland. And I am delighted that so far, the science fiction folks have embraced the novel. Really an unexpected delight.
That's really sweet. I also just think there's such a universal truth to the idea of being especially a teenage girl and just feeling like you can't possibly be from the same planet as everyone around you, you know?
1,000%. And like the idea that like all of your embarrassments are as big as the galaxy. And are being viewed by every single person on Earth. And there's a moment in the book where Adina is walking home from probably her biggest embarrassment that also like is tinged with a little trauma. And she's walking home. She's being walked home by her best friend, the older brother. And she feels like even the Hubble telescope hovering above her can see how big her embarrassment is. That her embarrassment is so big it can be viewed from space. And I was like, yeah, that is how it feels as a teenager when you have a social gaffe that you're like, I will never recover from this. This is as big as the moon.
Yep. Well, the stakes really are that high, you know?
They are.
At least they feel that way.
Do you feel that? Yeah. Did you have a similar moment growing up?
Oh God, I don't know if I had one similar moment, but I think especially being a girl and that, like, you know, especially as a teenager when you're supposed to want to be desired, but also that's scary. And what does that even mean? It's really complicated and there's just so much to navigate. And I think it really can feel like, how is this possibly how this is supposed to? This must be easier for everyone else. Like, you know, there are just so many layers to it.
That push-pull between look at me, don't look at me. Look at me, please don't look at me. Yes.
Yeah. It's wild. Yep. It's kind of crazy that we all go through that, you know?
Kind of crazy and also beautiful. And I think that the more we make that invisible conversation visible, the more we're like, oh, we are actually not alone. Well, pun intended. But yes, we are not alone.
Let's take a quick break, and then we will be back with more about Beautyland with Marie-Helene Bertino.
Nerdette is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. Join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic HBO original limited series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
I would love to hear what some of the other like books or pieces of art you were drawn to as you were writing this one. I mean, I think about the Little Prince. That comes up a number of times in the book.
Yes, the Little Prince would probably be the biggest lodestar. It is one of, if not my favorite book. It's a book that is misapprehended a lot. I think that people unfairly associate it with being only a children's book, which is not enough. Children's literature is the best literature. But I think people inaccurately assume it's only meant for kids. And I think the concepts in it are very, very adult. In that way, it appeals to humans, no matter what age they find themselves. And another thing I love about The Little Prince is that its ending requires the participation of the reader. So for those people who are listening to your show who have read The Little Prince or have read it recently, the ending is kind of an ellipsis ending. Depending on what you believe in and kind of how optimistic you are about the world that's been presented to you and the world that you live in is how you think the story of The Little Prince and his little rose will end. And I was really thinking of that when I was trying to land Beautyland, because the book had three different endings throughout its revision process. And when I finally realized that it would require the reader's participation to have like the final beat, that's when I knew I had found it. And I loved that it kind of held hands with the same idea of The Little Prince.
Oh, that's lovely. So we never hear or learn the name of Adina's home planet, but we do know that it sounds like a cricket hopping onto a plate of rice, which is like so exquisitely perfect and just like crispy and fun.
Crispy.
I wonder, you know,
I love that.
You talked about how like you don't think of this as genre necessarily, but like you definitely have some sci-fi flavor in here. How much fun was it to come up with that stuff?
Sci-fi flavor. Definitely sprinkled with some sci-fi flavor.
I do.
I mean, I hope it's sprinkled with a lot of other like flavors as well. It's so funny
for
because
sure.
like I tend to write in the speculative realm. This is my fourth book in a conversation with supernatural elements. And I have been asked, you know, like, why is your work so weird? Why are your characters so weird? And I promise you, I am trying to write as realistically as I can.
Like, yeah, that's funny. I wouldn't have asked why they're so weird, because I'm like, oh, thank you for writing such great weird stuff.
It is my pleasure entirely, believe me. But yeah, and but I'm always thinking like, I don't know what you mean. Like these, I am writing as hard as I can. I am writing as realistically and as honestly as I can. I'm trying to render what it really feels like to walk around noticing the world and how difficult it can be to try to keep one's heart open to the world. And so I think that I share that with some of my heroes in the genre, like Gabriel Garcia Marquez and Toni Morrison and Yoko Ogawa. I think that they also were always saying, like, this is not strange to me. This is not outside the realm of realism. This is very much realism to me.
Mm. I love that. I think it's beautiful.
Thank you.
Did you spend much time thinking about, like, the backstory of the planet? Like, did you build that out and it just didn't end up in the text? Or was it just exactly what it needed to be?
It's funny. I would try to think about it and then I would get really confused and I would remind myself, hey, just keep it simple. You only have to know as much as she would know, because her people are sound based. And so at one point in Beautyland, she says, if you were to attend the concert on planet Cricket Rice, it would look like people on a stage making no noise whatsoever. Only there wouldn't be people, there wouldn't be a stage, and there wouldn't be instruments. And so silence and sound are such important concepts in Beautyland, concepts that I was really trying to turn inside out and really play around with and see what they were capable of. I read a quote in my reading that said, people think that space is silent, but it's not. Mm. It's actually really loud. And I was thinking about that when I imagined that planet, how it could be at once made out of sound and also a physical object, and if that was possible. And then I would get kind of wrapped around the mental axle and have to, like, have a cup of tea and walk around a little bit and maybe, you know, go have a glass of wine and forget about it for a little. Yeah.
That's so funny. So would you go to outer space if you could?
Oh, gosh. No, I don't think so. Would you?
No, I wouldn't. No.
You know, I think that I'm glad to hear that. Because I think there are already too many people trying to do that. And I think instead of trying to find some kind of meaning elsewhere, we would do really well to focus on connecting more to the people that we have at home and the animals that we have at home and the creatures on this earth who, you know, I think would really benefit from some intention and care and thought on our own planet, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's very true. That's gorgeous. Well, thank you so much for coming on and talking to me about this beautiful book. It's definitely one of my favorites, so I'm really glad to have gotten to talk to you about it.
Oh, Greta, thank you so much for your care and thought in the read. I appreciate it.
All right, that's it for today. Thank you, as always, for listening along. I can't wait to hear what y'all think of Beautyland. Please send in your voice memos for this one, especially, like, you don't even have to finish the book. If you find a stunning sentence that you just want to rave about, send it over. This book is full of them. All you need to do is just record yourself on your smartphone and then email that audio file to nerdatpodcast@gmail.com. Also, our May book club pick is out today, so it is time to get your hands on that one as well. It is, of course, Amor Towles' short story collection, Table for Two. I can't wait to read that one along with y'all as well. And of course, we'll be back with a regular episode on Friday, too. Nerdette is produced by me and Anna Bauman at WBEZ in Chicago and is part of the NPR network. And our executive producer is Brendan Banaszak. We will see you on Friday.
Nerdette is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. Join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic HBO original limited series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.